Hey everyone, welcome to Decades on Dirt Roads, a life lived and worked outside. This is part two of Kelly. We covered her career and some stories of how she got into fire and what kept her in fire. And then for this episode, we are diving into some of her tips on leadership, some crazy experiences that she's had in fire. And then towards the end, the last 20 minutes or so, we kind of get into some of the more indelicate things as a female working with a male-dominated industry and kind of some funnier experiences of being remote and being in the woods on long extended periods with men. And so it's just kind of some funny things that are from our perspective of kind of how that's been for us. And so we hope you enjoy. A few little updates. We have our Facebook page and our Instagram page up and running. There's just going to be some cool forestry pictures, some pretty outdoor Pacific Northwest views. And then you'll just be getting updates on when new episodes are dropping. Again, we're still trying to be on this bi-monthly schedule, but then in between that, to try and keep you guys kind of entertained, we're going to be posting hints about who we're interviewing, you know, getting stuff in line for that. So yeah, that's kind of what's been going on behind the scenes. We're trying to get some gear potentially going. We haven't quite decided yet, but we have some stuff in the works, so we're trying to figure out how to organize all of this stuff. Without further ado, I'll stop rambling and you can listen to the rest of the interview with Kelly.
So in all of that, was there a favorite version of yourself, or, you know, obviously we can go into different favorite moments, but you as a leader, there's so many points of evolution of being in the Cascades as a 19, 20 year old, to doing something that really scared you, to holding a drip torch, to being an FMO and playing around with different entities and different groups that you never got a chance to really appreciate. What are some favorite eras for you or moments?
That's kind of a cool question. I think being a very young person and taking on just the job itself of rappelling and getting dropped out in the middle of nowhere, and that gave me a level of confidence that gives everybody a level of confidence.
Totally.
At a young age that sticks with you. It just sticks with you, mm-hmm. because you lean on that when you go through other challenges or you're struggling in any way. You lean back on that strength and that confidence that you gained from that thing that you did. So with that, what became one of my favorite things to do, and it was other spotters' favorite things as well, was to be in the helicopter the very first time a rookie rappelled.
Oh, I just got goosebumps.
Yeah, because that is such an intense emotional moment.
Yeah.
To watch their face, because it's only a 50-foot rappel.
Yeah.
And to see them 100% of the time, you can see that person experience this wild success.
Yeah.
That maybe they never thought they could do, or maybe all along they knew they could. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's experiencing it differently, but it's a pretty intense positive experience.
Yeah, that's a triumph to witness.
It is.
That's super cool.
It is. And we used to fight over who. First he's like, no, you've gotten four. I'm like, no, I'm doing the next one.
Yeah.
And so just being able to rejoice in someone else's success is something that gives you.
That's so powerful.
When you're in fire, when you're training people and seeing people succeed.
Yeah.
That carries over into all of aspects of your life. So it's a bit external to what you're asking about. So it was that. And then I would have to say that as a leader, as a female in a pretty much male-dominated environment, as a female leader, I stuck to very, very straight and rigid. Adhering to rules and being equal and being consistent and not messing around, mm-hmm. at all. And because you want to be taken seriously and you need to work a little harder to
totally.
Be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the next place that I came to where there was a like this poignant version of me that changed was when I had my child. Something changed on a for real on a biological level, and yeah. I started seeing people differently. Mm. And that was when I learned to lead to the person and really get to know that person and understand what that person needed. So it wasn't this one size fits all. We're all going to run 6 miles today no matter what, when maybe that person over there shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And so I believe that that is when that occurred. And I think I became a much better leader. I think what happened there was a level of compassion maybe that wasn't there.
Totally.
Because you develop this stoicism throughout this job. And it, especially in earlier years, showing any kind of emotion or vulnerability was equated to weakness.
Totally.
Especially, and I'll say it, especially for a female.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think things are different now.
Mm-hmm.
In our society as a whole. Mm-hmm. We appreciate people expressing their emotions, so we understand people better and we understand what people's needs are better.
Mm-hmm.
And so that probably that did occur right around the time that I had him.
And when was that? When did you have?
15 years ago, and I was an AFMO.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So, and it was... I took about a year where I detailed into different positions because I did not want to fight fire.
Mm-hmm.
As a new mom. And I did quite a while in a NEPA detail, which was really interesting.
Yeah.
And it gave me that time that I needed.
Yeah, with your kid.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
We, Trish was our last interviewer, and she talked a little bit about what it was like being a mom, and she hounded on just trying to find that balance, but, you know, reaffirmed that you can be both and you can do both things really well.
Oh, definitely. It's a challenge in that you need to have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
You need to think things out. You need to know what, you know, for me it was, okay, I have a commute, I have childcare, and my husband works out in the woods too, and he's not able to be there for emergencies. And so sometimes it was me going and picking him up and going back to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done. I think that the limitations that occur with having a child in fire are placed upon yourself. You're placing those on yourself. And meaning that I think a lot of women will leave, then have the child, or have the child and leave, go, no, I don't want to do this, or I can't. When, if you want to, you can. There are plenty of single parents that fight fire, and I would work with them with their schedules. And if you have a supervisor that wouldn't do that, that would be, I think, a very rare event.
Yeah.
Not a place you'd want to be working.
Correct.
And so, for me, I didn't want to spend 2 weeks away from him out on fire assignments, so... I would take about one a year.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to three or four.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Just way more coordination on top of all your coordination with
work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's that worry and stress that it's not going to work out, but it will. You will find a way through family, friends.
Yeah.
Even other people at work. You know, there were times where the front desk lady took my son home with her, and you got it. You know, there were times where I needed to be there, and he was there with me. And if I needed to go out in the field, then the ranger's wife took him. It works out.
Yeah.
It does. So.
Give us, like, one story or, like, one highlight, either operationally or anything that... as a young firefighter or as a young leader, you'll just, like, never forget an outdoor one. I mean, I bet there's a ton, but just give us, like, one that
was super... fire example?
Yeah, sure, if you want.
So, the one that I will never forget, July 26th, was 20 days after Storm King. And three repellers. We were dropped up in the Okanagan Wilderness with three smoke jumpers on a fire that was 300 acres of spots.
Three of you.
Six all together. And we were going to go, we were on, the fire was falling off of a ridge, right? Just spotted all over the top of a ridge and down the sides.
Yeah.
And the jumpers were going to go around one way and we were going to go around the other. First, just walk it and try to get a plan together.
Yeah.
This is 1994. So that fire season was crazy. And resources were just not available. Even equipment wasn't available. All we could get was a pump and a couple hundred feet of hose. And there was this tiny little, it wasn't a lake, it was more of a pond.
Yeah.
We ended up in there with fire all the way around us, subalpine fir. And arguing over whether or not we could get in the pond or whether or not we should run. And it's 94, so I just finished my running career, and I knew exactly how far I could run.
Yeah.
How fast I could run.
Yeah.
Because we were 6 miles in. The trail was down at the bottom of that ridge, and it was 6 miles out. And I'm all, I know exactly how long it'll take me to get out there.
Callie's got a stopwatch.
It's probably going to be your record.
Yeah.
Right. And so finally, we all agreed that we needed to go, because there was one way out, and it was closing rapidly. And we ran out of there, and it was one of those things that was never spoken of.
You just get to the trailhead, and you're like,
yeah, there were embers this big being thrown, like the size of...
So did you drop gear?
Yes.
Did you have anything?
A tool and a fire shelter.
Okay.
And it was throwing softball-sized embers on us all the way out. So
that's chilling.
I've never forgotten any, like, every second of that assignment. I've never forgotten it because it was a mere matter of days after Storm King, and I had friends that survived that from NCSB, and our base manager at the time, one of the hell attack foreman that died at Storm King was one of his best friends. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty close to that, and It's just the way we fought fire back then. When you go up to Storm King, if you ever have, and you see what they were doing, it's easy to pass judgment on what they were doing, but that is how we fought fire.
Right.
You'd land on the top of a ridge and start taking the line down and around on an underslung line.
Yeah.
Indirect, direct attack, whatever, you got it out. And so that stuck with me it will forever.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one that it's not, you're not, that's...
You're not going to forget a near miss like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's plastered on you.
No, I had a weird taste in my mouth even.
Yeah.
And a weird feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of the guys turned to me and he goes, are we going to die in here? And I was all, no. Nope. Mm-hmm. But in my head, I'm all, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
So you're that person who's just in denial to the end.
Well, he was starting to have some issues, so I wasn't denying. I knew in my head that we were in a bad spot, but I didn't...
But you're that positive,
I wanted him not to...
Slow down.
Yeah. I needed him to run.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, I got a good pace.
Not
why don't you
armadilla,
keep up with me?
Not, you know, because he was... You could tell he was starting to...
I mean, it was probably hot.
Starting to lose it a little bit.
Yeah.
Loud. So that was the one and only time I ever saw an area ignition. So when we had walked just off the lee side of the ridge, all of the timber was red. So it had been preheated. And when we were standing next to the pond, there was what sounded like a bomb that went off. And it just ignited.
Wow.
I've never seen that happen. And so, yeah, that was...
Eerie.
Very much.
Yeah. You feel pretty small, pretty fast, but I'm going to go be fast down this hill.
Yeah. And it was really just trying to get off that hillside without anybody getting injured. Because we're trying to get over dead and down that was almost old growth size to get down to the trail. But I looked up a photo of it not too long ago, and it's still nuked up there.
Hmm.
So, how'd you guys get picked up?
Well, there was a trail at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So
you just
walked
the rest of the trail out.
We ran the trail all the way out to the trailhead where there was a road.
Mm, okay.
Gotcha.
And then someone came and picked us up. And yeah, that was pretty much it. There's no AAR.
Something a lot of people probably just buried to the bottom.
Yes. Yeah, get back in line for... That was 13, 14, around there, Rappel fires that summer. And not long after that, the Tai fire was the large fire in Washington that was going on at the time. And our Rappel crew was working out of North Cascade Smoke Jumper Base, so we were just in their rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting close to 35, 40 days worked, something like that. And I just said, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. I want to go home. And so I was living with my folks at the time for the summer. So I grab one of the rigs and I drive back into Chelan, and you could see the fire coming down into Chelan. And my parents, I'm looking forward to just getting a shower and sleeping in a bed. I just want one night at home and I'll come back up the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents are loading all of their valuables into the fifth wheel. And they're like, we're out of here. And I'm all, I'm not. I'm sleeping in my bed.
Were they actually evacuated?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. And I said, I'm not going. And they're like, we have to. And I said, you guys go. But I'm not. I'm sleeping in my bed and I'm taking a shower. We're going to make some top ramen.
Yeah.
And so they're like, what should we do? And I go, go.
Yeah.
Get the trailer. Get all the stuff out of here. Go. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. So I had just had my shower and I'm like, oh gosh, I'm so excited just to go to bed. And there's a pounding on the door. And I'm like,
right on cue.
I go answer the door. And it's the local IA crew. And they're like, you've got to come help us because the fire's coming down behind Kyle's house, who was our base manager, who's mm-hmm. up at NCSB with the helicopter. And so I ended up digging line all night long there.
At least you got to eat.
So that was that summer for everybody. That's what it looked like for everyone.
Oh.
It was just a crazy summer.
That's relentless.
Yeah. Yep.
Dang.
It was... That's the one that I think sticks in everybody's mind. Anybody that was... I'm not sure what was going on in Oregon at the time. There was something going on in 94 down here. It wasn't Tower. Tower occurred in 96, I believe. Because I think I was here. But that was just a real heavy fire year for the PNW period. But, yeah. That's the year that sticks. Like, all the fires.
Dang.
Waking up in the morning and just seeing new columns everywhere.
And you see that immediately upon waking up for your first line of sight of the day. That is
I remember sleeping on the lawn out at NCSB and then waking up and going, one, two, three.
Damn.
You just have a moment of, this is going to be a really, really, really long day. Long week. Long month.
Yes. A lot of packouts.
I'm sure.
Yeah. At the end of that summer... I actually had looked it up in the book because I've written them all down. I had to look it up, see how many I had. It was 13 or 14 fires that I repelled and had full packouts. And I remember sleeping, not really leaving the couch much for about a month at the end of that fire season.
I'm sure you needed quite the wind down.
Yeah, it was pretty
well said. I'm going to be stationary for the next 30 days.
Exactly.
Dang.
But.
Wow. That's a wild year. But with all the things that you've talked about and something that Catherine and I, as we look to, hey, what are some things that we want to get out of this other than, you know, having people walk down memory lane and getting the good moments and all that is, you know, what's some advice that you want to pass on to the next generation of leaders, of women in fire, of women in recreation, of just being a firefighter, being a repeller, whatever that may be. What's some advice that you have?
I think the pursuit of what scares you is healthy. You need to. Otherwise, you can't grow. I guess the terminology is stretch. Mm-hmm. You can't. So if you're turning away from something because it scares you, and I'm not talking about a safety level, but it scares you on a level of whether or not you're afraid if you're going to succeed, you need to pursue it. And I like failure in that you have to put yourself out there and do these things and you're going to fail. That's what makes you learn and remember. And that's what makes you get better. is when you do that. If you say it, if you stay in a safe spot, you're going to have regret at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put yourself out there and you pursue those things that you want to pursue through that fear, isn't that courage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Moving in the face of fear, moving forward in the face of fear. And being okay with, you know, I there are some times where I'm going to fail. And when I get to a position where I can help other people, I will let them fail to a point,
mm-hmm,
before stopping it or helping them so that they can learn from them for themselves and go, see, you did it. So it's a two-edged, it's definitely a double-edged sword for me where I'm succeeding, and when I'm helping someone else as well succeed, then I get to enjoy that. And I think that's important for everybody to keep that in mind through your career, to pursue things for yourself and then try to pass them on to other people as well.
Yeah.
And when you're in a position where you can provide that space for someone to grow, that it's a safe space to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And then they grow through that and succeed through that, then you've gained something out of that as well.
Yeah.
I know that's a little...
Well, I like that, though.
I actually really like that. And yeah. I love that you have...
Touchy-feely, but...
Yeah. Yeah. No, it works.
Real.
Because Trish had decision space, and you have safe place to fail. And I feel like those all kind of go together.
Yeah,
like, it's
awesome.
Just you have the space to make the decisions you're going to make, and your leadership's going to catch you when you need help.
Well, yeah. Those are all the mentors that I had.
Yeah.
I was fortunate. I have been fortunate throughout my career in that I've always had somebody standing there going, do it. And even though I'm like,
yeah, they're like, I don't think
do
I
it.
Can.
Do it.
Yeah.
Jump.
Just go. Go.
That's awesome.
Go spot that load.
Yeah. I figured out.
Go, I see that fire. No training. Just, it's your turn. Put it out. Go do it. And then when you start to flounder, they've been there to go, okay.
Yeah.
Let's get it back on track.
Yeah. Let's pull you out of the water a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you start kicking a little
bit.
Take a breath. And then you're
going back in.
Why do I feel like your dad taught you how to swim like that?
I don't even remember who taught me how to swim. But that's the metaphor that I've definitely grown up with. And something as a young leader for me is like being in a coaching role right now is there's so much to be said for like my own small successes of being an athlete and all those types of things, but getting to brainstorm with another human and then seeing them like that, like the light switch come on, and then all the mm-hmm. things that you've been working for, and you let them fail. And then they finally just believe in themselves and just get out of their own way. That's way more magical than my own successes. That's what's so cool is talking with someone like you that has had notable individual experiences, but then has fostered an environment and a lifestyle and a tempo to say, hey, I want to create this space within an organization that all of our leaders are a part of this.
Yeah. I get excited when people that I once supervised are now excelling.
Yeah.
And promoting.
That's awesome.
You had a hand in that. Mm-hmm. You'd like to think
totally.
That you helped them along.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone did that for me.
Yeah.
And you touched on the female part of it. I probably am not like the best person to delineate whether you're having a female or male experience, because for me, I tried not to lean on that.
Yeah.
Like if I was slighted, oh, it wasn't because of that. It was because I wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I wasn't given an opportunity, in my mind, I didn't go there, that it wasn't because of that.
Yeah.
It was because I didn't have enough experience, or it wasn't good, or I just lost that competition.
Yeah. You've got to compartmentalize that for sure.
I do.
Yeah.
And I always have. And that I felt that I knew that I could go out there and do that job as good as anybody
mm-hmm.
with at my speed, my tempo.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ever put myself in a position where... Even though I say I move forward in the face of fear, I still wouldn't put myself into a position I knew I wasn't qualified for or I wasn't ready to do.
Totally.
So a position was not applied for, or I didn't pursue a qualification, until I knew I was ready for it. Mm-hmm. That's what worked for me. Mm-hmm. Some people, they're okay with taking one assignment and moving on. I think that's where my confidence came from for me personally, was I had to do it a specific way. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to do this thing for so long before I move forward. So when I do move forward, even though I'm afraid to, mm-hmm. I know I've got the background and the experience.
Yeah, you have all your evidence to prove to yourself that you're like, I'm ready. I know this because I did this, and this.
Yeah. So there were times where opportunities were presented and I said, no.
Yeah.
No, I'm not ready to do that. Mm-hmm. Even though someone else said, well, of course you are. And I'm like, nope. Mm-mm.
Yeah, you have to believe in yourself enough to push yourself forward.
And so that's a conversation I've always had with people before pushing them. Mm-hmm. I've always pushed people, subordinates, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, people that I'm trying to lead, push them until they just say no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I'll back off. Mm-hmm. But the opportunity, that's your job, to present that opportunity and to give people that nudge.
Totally.
But that's always where I was at. Equally, doesn't happen as much, but equally you do sometimes have to hold people back from themselves. Where you're like, maybe you might need a few more rolls here.
Yeah.
Like, let's take a few more laps in the pool before we swim across the ocean. And so that's a long answer to your small, short question.
No, but I like that. I like where you take it with things. Because there's a ton of power in the preparation of whatever that may be for your career or just your day-to-day. You talk about going with intention in your day, and I'm sure that didn't stop when you built that base. I'm sure that's the way that you go about every day and being a mom and being a wife and all those things. So I'm super thankful that we get to talk to you in this capacity, because this isn't something that, you know, you happen upon just walking around. So thank you for your time. This has been awesome. I love getting to brainstorm with leaders like you. This is super cool.
Thanks for asking me.
Yeah.
I'm truly flattered that I got to spend this time with you guys. So.
Yeah. And to the female point, you know, in talking with people of, hey, what should we ask Kelly and all that kind of stuff? There's totally a part of us that wants to talk about, you know, being a woman in this industry and being all those things. But to the same respect, you know, we both can appreciate that it's awesome being a chick. It's awesome being a woman. And there's so many superpowers that you get as a girl and as a woman. But to that extent, we're still just doing a job. Mm-hmm. We don't have to include that femininity in this job when we are typically outnumbered. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you brought that upon just in your own.
There's certain things that you adjust, mm-hmm. especially when you're being mentored by a man. You can't lead the same way.
Totally.
Men can get away with a lot of yelling. and nobody even notices it. Right?
As soon as a chick yells, it's eyes are up.
You hear mom. You hear girlfriend.
Yeah.
And there's like a triggering response for that.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. They're like, whoa, what's going on?
Not that I'm a yeller at all, but like,
there's times when you want to. No, there's a little bit of a subtlety that comes in and goes, that's probably not going to work for me if I do it that way. Mm-hmm. And of course you try initially when you're younger and go, oh, wait, that's not me.
Yeah.
I can't emulate someone else and be successful when I'm not them. And so there are like subtleties that you have to shift.
Something crazy that I was reading is that men don't like talking face to face like how we are now. They want to be at like not a straight on angle. And so I've been trying that at work because all my whole office except for our office manager is male. And it is so funny to like notice that they're more receptive if you're not just like, hey, like, what are we doing today? Like, looking in their eyes, like, you kind of go to the desk on their side and like have a side more
parallel.
Yeah, more mm-hmm. you know, different angle for the conversation. That they seem like less like, I don't know how to. It just noticed a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, how much your body language and just your physical positioning in a conversation differs between. Mm-hmm. A man and a woman.
I always stand downhill from a man that I'm taller than.
Really?
Where I wouldn't do that with a woman. Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't...
Just to decrease that possibility of being intimidating.
Well, yeah, because you're like warring over them.
Right, I don't want to be. I want to just have a conversation about whatever's going on this fire line right now. Yeah. I don't want to make you uncomfortable. That's one of those subtle things that you do that you don't think about until you just said that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I used to do that a lot.
So interesting.
Yeah, there's like little things like that.
Just subtleties.
Yeah.
That will somehow make the situation more amenable and more positive and less weird. And even though maybe I was the one making it weird. Yeah.
I think, why are you in that stumble?
I'm just comfy down here. Hell, you can come out. I'm good right here. I'm really good.
But I think that's part of it. If we're talking about being a woman, it's like the awareness, like, I want to be on the same level without making it weird. Right. And I don't know if men, like, think about, like, I'm making it weird. So, like, sometimes you are. But, like, we're so aware of that, like, kind of hyper aware of it that...
I think so.
I think a lot of people, a lot of women especially, like, try really hard to kind of fit in and be equals in this industry.
Yeah, to be the mediator of that.
Yeah.
Rather than going in and just trying to be or meet them where they're at, I feel like we are more hyper aware of, okay, how can I set myself up best for success
just to fit in with the
group. To fit in and just let it flow.
Right. Without losing your gender.
Yeah.
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 Definitely and so, balance.
You have different boundaries when you can be one of the guys, but you still have different boundaries than one of the guys.
I like that you said that. Because that's totally a phrase that gets thrown around. Which, I mean, it's comforting because it's like, oh, I'm welcomed. And that's just their way of communicating it. Right. But you are right in saying that at the end of the day, there are different boundaries.
You're not good gaming anyone.
Yeah.
Little butt slap. No, I had to teach my coworkers about gender-neutral pee spots, so we weren't just parked on the side of the promise road, or we weren't just like parked in the middle of a field. It's like, you guys realize I have to walk half a mile to go behind a tree.
Gender-neutral pee spots.
Let's find some trees, people.
That is incredible. That will be the slogan of this podcast: is yes. Gender-neutral pee spots. Oh, every girl gets that, though. Every girl that's going to listen to this is going to know a moment in time where someone who was driving the truck was not aware of the gender-neutral adherences.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Boys are and they don't think about it until you point it out to them. Like, no. My old coworker, I was like, dude, stop pulling over on the main freaking road. If you have to pee, I have to pee times two.
Oh, that just fires me up. It's the most basic human need. We gotta express it.
But I guarantee you pee in a bottle once, they're gonna be asking you if you have to go.
Don't open that can of worms.
No.
Let it stay ignorant. Don't give them that possibility. Have some non-negotiables. Have some boundaries with yourself.
Well, you just reminded me of a pretty funny story.
Incredible.
Yeah, on the Hotshot crew, and you know when you do need to leave the crew to take care of your personal business, it's maybe one of the only times you get during the day to be alone. So you take a hike, right?
Yeah.
You take a hike.
Yeah.
And you take your binoculars and your snacks, and it's an event.
Indeed.
So I do this one day, and I find, you know, where the big, huge, enormous old growth tree has tipped over, root balls in the air, and there is this huge hole.
A haven.
Right?
A haven. You are hidden.
I'm in the hole. Well, ops and the IC, when they do go to the fire, tend to sometimes take a walk out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh. Yeah, in the
conversation.
Green.
Oh, yeah. No.
And they're standing at the edge of my...
of your throne.
Stump hole.
On the top of the tree?
They're standing right at the edge of the top, right at the top of this hole. And I mean, it's a big hole. It's deep. But I'm like with my back against the hole. I am so stuck right now. I can't move.
Right,
I can't make a sound.
Were your pants down already?
Yes. I'm committed to my personal time. And I was terrified. I wasn't breathing. It was like, you know, you're hiding from the serial killer in the woods, and you're watching the movie, and you're like, quit breathing so loud. And so I'm holding my breath because I'm afraid they're, like, there's dirt coming down on me to where they're standing that close to the edge. I mean, at one point, I wanted to yell, like, safety first, you're going to fall in there.
And
oh, boy. That was... Next time I hiked a lot further away. I almost made it all the way back to base camp. It was almost a very bad day.
That's traumatizing.
Oh, yeah.
What started as such a magical moment. I get to be away from people. This is going to be such a nice escape to the two people that are literally in charge of this fire are standing above me in my most vulnerable position. Help me. Why is this happening to me?
It's like the only thing better is looking up and seeing a game camera, you know?
I have definitely got that.
But...
Spotted.
Yeah, that was...
It's a little thing.
It's a tight spot.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh my gosh, the little things. Oh, to be a woman, that's what I say. Oh, to be a woman.
I think anyone caught in that position is just... screwed.
There's no... So... You obviously didn't breathe, and then they left?
They finally walked away.
Oh, yeah.
Because, boy, they were chatty.
Yeah.
And they finally just left, and I was able to, like, crawl out of the stump hole. But I had to wait till they were gone, so they didn't see me crawling
out. Yeah, leave no trace. Have to leave without
a
sight.
I don't know if you've made it down to Southern California yet, where they have all of the convict crews out. On the fields in Southern California, the soccer fields, right? They're soccer field complexes. They're huge, absolutely enormous. They're acres.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all the Klieg lights, the stadium lights on all night long.
Oh, fantastic.
And so it is a sea of humanity. And then they have these outhouses just placed randomly.
Wonderful.
And they can't stay in tents. They have to sleep out. They're under the lights, and we're out there too. All the hotshot crews are. And they told us, they said, look, please, just if you have to go to the bathroom at night, will you please wake up someone? They were talking to the women. Mm-hmm. Will you please wake up someone and go with you?
Mm-hmm.
Because as you can see, these outhouses are in the sea of sleeping bags. And I was like, there is absolutely no way I'm going to wake one of my crewmates up to go to the bathroom. I'm not. I'm not going to wake them up at 2 a.m. because that's 2 a.m. It's always 2 a.m, right?
Yeah.
And if you're hydrated.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to hold it and thinking it'll go away, right? We all do this. Like, it'll just go away if I go back
worse.
To sleep.
It's
worse.
Fundamentally gets so worse.
And so I'm awake. It's lit. I'm looking off into the sea of sleeping bags and convict crews, and there's the closest outhouse is like 100 meters away.
Oh, Lord.
And I'm all... I gotta go.
This is my fight.
Right. And I'm not waking up somebody.
No.
And so I'm tiptoeing over the top of people, trying not to wake them up.
Oh,
it was like that game of Operation. And you think, whew, I made it.
Yeah.
But then you've got to open the door.
Yeah.
Not slam the door.
Not slam the door. And then you're thinking, okay, whatever. I've got to do this. I'm going to do it. I'm going to wake someone up. But you got to come back out.
Right.
And then
walk over
the
Tetris.
Top of... Exactly.
High stakes Tetris.
That was another one that was... It's ranked up there in one of the most stressful days of my life.
Not combining.
It's up there with War Creek, you know? I'd rather go through War Creek again than walk through a sea of convicts at 2 o'clock in the morning to go to the bathroom because they're not going to hurt you. They're not going to hurt you.
No.
But it's just the idea that they're going to wake up and probably start making fun of you.
Yeah.
And everybody's like around you in this little shack.
Yes.
Public humiliation in a vulnerable place, outrunning a crowning fire, which is the more terrifying thing.
Oh, yeah. I had, because I had the female convicts came after me on a fire, and it was terrifying.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
We'll save that for a different day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really proud of us that it took, what is this, six episodes?
Six.
To bring up peeing in the woods.
Yeah.
We were doing so good.
We were.
That's excellent.
But it had to come up.
Yeah.
Had to. Well, if you get hot shots in the room, we're going to talk about boots.
Yeah.
Poop.
Day-to-day amenities.
But if we go on long enough, the riddles come out.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no, no. I am so, no.
I've got some right here.
Yes, yes.
We'll leave those for another day.
The riddles would create violence. Because they somebody, do. Yeah, someone will just be like, I'm not telling.
Yeah, but then someone, day two. Whoever yeah. tells, gets so much shit.
Yes.
Well, now you can cheat because you could probably look it up on the internet. But back when I was on the Shaku, there was no way of knowing, and we would go on for days until someone just was about ready to break mentally.
But once you know, yeah. it is the most purest form of entertainment to watch someone just get so angry and yeah. frustrated and like, yeah. will someone just tell me? Tell me! Grabbing your shoulder, freaking tell me! Oh, yeah. What is the answer?
That one, and then when we would get on to, have you gotten on to those long mop-up days, and you start classifying who you're going to eat first?
Oh, well, maybe not eat first. But
we would do that. Yes. Who's going to get eaten first?
By proxy, start ranking people's strengths and weaknesses. We do a lot of, you know, if we're stranded on an island, who do we pick? Mm-hmm. Who do we pick? You know, who's, and then you yeah. start ranking people, and then that just goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah. Well, since you guys brought it up, do you want to leave them with a riddle for next week?
Still recording. Yeah. You thought that we were off the air? Oh,
do you,
no.
Do you want that one story out?
Oh, no.
I don't care. This is incredible.
Seems horrified.
This is the best part of the podcast is the fact that people just forget that this is even here. That is incredible. Folks, we got Kelly on the hook. She gave us the most vulnerable things, and she is on air with you. So if you're still listening, thank you for tuning in this long, because Kelly has not been aware that the microphone's been on. Honestly, probably the last 25 minutes.
You turned it off.
Absolutely when? Not. We would have given you the signal, Coach.
I missed that.
That is incredible.
Sweet.
Okay. With that being said, do you have a riddle, or do you want to cut it? Because I don't have a riddle in my brain. We've stunned her.
I'm done. I'm stuttering. I'm done.
And close.